Welcome to another PFRPA podcast. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and today I have a legend with me, a Dallas Cowboy legend, Doug Cosby. Doug, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I don't know that I'm a legend, but I'm doing good.
We're all legends, at least in our own mind, right?
Yeah, somebody's mind, maybe my grandkids or something.
There you go, man. You know, the older we get, the better we get as players, right? you forget all the penalties, all the missed assignments.
Yeah, especially when you start coaching, you start telling the kids you coach, I never made a mistake like that. How could you do that? Yeah.
Right.
So
I've been there before. I understand exactly. Good stuff. All right. So let's get started. Let's, why don't you give everybody a quick bio on you, where you're from, where'd you play high school ball, college, pros? Give us the bio.
Okay. So I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Lived in East Palo Alto till I was 10, which anyone who's not from the Bay Area from the 50s or 60s, East Palo Alto was not the part of the Bay Area you wanted to grow up in. It was a pretty rough area. But anyways, from a single parent, my parents were divorced when I was like six, never really saw or had a relationship with my dad. I have an older brother, older sister who died a couple years ago from cancer. And then my mom remarried when I was 11. I have two half sisters, went to high school in Mountain View, California, which probably most people have heard of that now because of Google, their headquarters. Right. Went to St. Francis High School. I was fortunate enough back then, private Catholic school cost about $400 a year, and I was able to work at the school in the summer to pay for the tuition. Nowadays, I don't think you could work off 20, 25 grand in the summer to pay for private school tuition. Then I went to the University of Santa Clara, right. Which is hence changed their name to Santa Clara University. That's a whole nother podcast probably. graduated there with a business degree in marketing, met my wife there, got drafted in 1979, the third round by the Cowboys, played my whole 10-year career in Dallas and played on some really good teams early in my career, some good teams in the middle and a couple of really bad teams at the end. So I was there, Tom Landry's last 10 years. So I kind of jokingly say I was one of the guys that got him fired and was there briefly during the transition, like one meeting with Jerry and Jimmy. And, I was coming off Achilles surgery about 2 months before the team was bought by Jerry. He fired Tom, hired Jimmy. I went to the first meeting and then just went in and told him, I'm done. I'm retiring. 33-year-old with Achilles surgery, you probably don't want him around to rebuild with. That's kind of
that's tough.
That's kind of like the quick 33 years of my life.
Wow. How about that? It's one of the things that you mentioned that strikes a chord with me. You talked about growing up and, single family, single parent household, growing up in the rougher neighborhood. It's something actually that I share a lot with my 14-year-old son today who has big football dreams. And we talk about most of the guys in that locker room had a pretty tough upbringing. Sacrifice that needs to be made to play football at that level. I think that, you're a product of your environment. You have to have something that's going to drive you beyond what you think is possible to be able to hit the heights of being able to play in the NFL. So if you think about the NFL locker room and all the stories of all the guys, we kind of all had that background in common for the most part. Most guys had a pretty tough upbringing, wouldn't you say?
I would think probably 80 to 90% of the guys I played with and the guys I know, didn't come from whatever normal is, two parent middle class, upper middle class, you know, highly educated, both parents went to college type family. Maybe nowadays it's changed a little, but I don't think so. I think part of what drives guys, I mean, obviously there's some God-given ability, you know, your size, you know, some athleticism, but I think the thing that really drives guys is, you know, you see it as a way, to try to better your life, to try to, you know, have it better, you know, than your parents or your grandparents had it. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to do that. But I think for a lot of us, because of the athleticism or size or whatever it is that we were born with, you know, you kind of gravitate towards that.
I think you're right. You know, just thinking about my own life, I grew up on the west side of Cleveland in a not so good neighborhood, and, you know, very blue collar, very, it was tough. It was, you know, lace up your boots, work hard. And I honestly looked at football the same way. I looked at football more as an opportunity to get a jump start on life and to better my life moving forward, more so than, hey, I really love this game and I want to play this forever.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you know, for I think a lot of it was athletics in general, because I played basketball, baseball, obviously football growing up. And basketball was my first love, but, you know, 6'6" and okay vertical but no ball handling skills, you're probably not going to go very far in basketball. But I think looking at it is just an escape from kind of the reality of, you know, what life was like when I was young. It got better when my mom got remarried, but you know, for the first 10 and a half years, you know, it was really rough. You know, East Palo Alto was predominantly African American, some Hispanic. I was about, I think, one or two white kids, like on my little league baseball team. And, you know, a lot of my teammates used to be like, oh man, like, you know, it couldn't have been that bad. So I started like showing them pictures of my little league team. And they're like, damn. And I was lucky I had a 6-year-old older brother who was a great athlete, and he was, they didn't have gangs back then in the late 50s, early 60s, but he was one of the tough guys in the neighborhood that everyone knew you didn't mess with, you know. So, he had my back a lot when I did get caught. And it wasn't for him, who knows what happens, you know, sometimes. But it's like athletics was a way to first to escape, then it really helped me be able to go to a good private high school. And it obviously got me a free college education. And the fact that I got to play in the NFL 10 years was really just icing on the cake. I mean, that was never really the goal, I think, like you said, you know, but it was an escape, and it was a place that, you know, things were a little bit more positive and no one really cared what you looked like, you know, where you came from, you know, you're all on a team together.
Yeah, definitely the brotherhood, being on an NFL team is something crazy special. And we all talk about that and the instant bond that it builds. And so in that vein, talking about the brotherhood and making it to the NFL, we all kind of have our first moment of when we just, it really sets in that, oh my gosh, I'm in the NFL now. This is the show. You coming from Santa Clara College, was it?
Yeah, University of Santa Clara. College, yeah. Is a small school, Division II school, yeah.
Yeah, so much different than, you know, me coming from a Michigan State or guys going from Notre Dame or Ohio State, what have you. So when did it sink into you that I'm in the NFL now? This is the real deal, and I'm here.
You know, I never really had like that, oh, I can't believe it moment, other than the first time after I got drafted and we had a rookie mini camp and we went to the Cowboys facility, you know, I think that facility was their first facility, you know, so I mean, it was not much, but walking in the locker room, because my junior senior year in college, they had been in the Super Bowl those 2 years, you know, they beat Denver, then lost to Pittsburgh, and all, you know, growing up as a little kid and through high school, they were, you know, America's team. They were on every Sunday. So walking in that locker room and seeing guys' lockers and like, oh, I know that name. I know that name. I know that name. I know that. I mean, like, you know, the 45-man roster, probably 40 of the names, or at least 30 of the names, are household names. And so that was probably the biggest thing, like, dang, man, like, what am I doing here? And then, to be honest with you, once we got to training camp, Dallas was very unique at the time that they would sign like about 90 free agents. So I think then there was, I don't remember, it was 12 or 16 rounds in the draft. It was at least 12.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so they would bring in the draft picks, 90 free agents, and like two or three guys who maybe were drafted the year before that had injuries that didn't really play. So there was like over 100 guys for like almost 2 weeks. And then they cut 50, and then they brought in all the vets. And so that was really kind of the start of training camp. So I remember in the beginning, like by the time the vets came in college, you were getting ready for game week, 2 weeks, 2 days. Okay, with season starting, like, we're like, dang, we're just really, those last 2 weeks were really for nothing. We're starting now, and we got two more weeks before we even start preseason games. And then four preseason games. And I just remember about halfway through camp, I really, truly didn't care if I got cut. I was just like, man, I was just tired of it. And I think it really helped me because I was a third round pick. And at the time I didn't know, but you know, for a third round pick to get cut back then, probably even more so now, you got to pretty much really mess up. Yeah. But you know, you don't know that then. Yeah. And, but it kind of took all the pressure off. Like I didn't really care until like that last cut, you know, then like, wait a minute, I've been here for 2 months and they got to cut like seven more guys. You know, I don't want to go home now after doing all this, but, you know, just being around an environment with those guys that were, you know, you just grew up watching play. Like nowadays you can watch any team you want, right? I mean, back then it's like you had to watch the Cowboys if you wanted to watch the NFL because they were on every Sunday on CBS.
Right.
And the NBC had an AFC game, but the Cowboys, whoever they played, they were always on. You know, and Roger Staubach was still there and Hollywood Henderson was still there and, you know, Rayfield Wright. I mean, there's a long list of, you know, perennial all pros and Hall of Famers, you know. And, you know, then I played my whole career with Dorsett, Randy White, Too Tall Jones, Tony Hill. I mean, the list just goes on. And so being around those that early was kind of the aha moment for me. You know, I never really like pinched myself and said like, oh dang, you're in the NFL now. Cause I mean, as you know, once training camp's over and then it starts for real, man, you know, it's a mad dash to get through the season. I mean, there's no time. I mean, you're either at practice studying, working out, eating, sleeping. I was already married. My wife got pregnant during our rookie year. I mean, like, there was no time for, like, you know, you were just trying to survive.
Yeah. Most people truly can't grasp that whirlwind that happens from your senior year all the way through that rookie year. And it's funny you mentioned that about a third round player being cut or not. I was a second round pick in 95 to Jacksonville, and I felt the same way going in. I didn't know that, hey, I, you know, it's not likely I'm going to get cut. I was a high enough draft pick. I felt the same way. So, you know, you're balling out every single day and pushing yourself to the limit. And, you know, and I remember that season because it was our first year. We had five preseason games that year. You know, our first game being the Hall of Fame game playing against the Carolina Panthers. And I remember getting past that fifth game and, you know, and I started as a rookie. So I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like normally this would be halfway through my college season and we haven't even started yet. Like I was like, how in the world am I going to make it to January? You know?
Oh yeah. You know, I actually had the same experience. My rookie year, we played the Hall of Fame game too. So we had five preseason games and it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, season's almost over. Right. like, I mean, all, you know, all that stuff meant nothing, you know, I mean, like it was just starting and, you know, it's a really big adjustment, you know, and, you know, a little bit about what you were talking about probably later in my career, my like fifth, sixth, seventh year, when I was kind of well established, I was a starter, had been to a couple of Pro Bowls. The thing to where it kind of got me was there'd be times on the sideline watching the other teams, you know, watching, you know, Dan Marino, or, you know, I remember playing Houston a couple times, watching Earl Campbell run and like jumping out of the way on the sideline so he doesn't run you over, and Walter Payton, and, you know, these guys that you didn't play with, and, you know, you just got to see them in person every once in a while. And I remember just a couple times kind of thinking like, I'm getting paid to stand down here and watch these guys play. It's like, you know, as a fan, you would pay a stupid amount of money to be able to stand down there on the sideline and, you know, and you know, watch these, at the time, future Hall of Famers, greatest guys ever to play. The guys you're with every day, you kind of get used to them and, you know, take it for granted. But the guys you see every once in a while live, it was like, you know, for, like I said, 3 or 4 years where you're confident enough in, you know, you were established. It was like you could kind of enjoy it.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned Dan Marino. Dan was actually my first kind of that aha moment that I've arrived. You know, and I mentioned that I played in the Hall of Fame game my rookie year. So it was Jacksonville, you know, which was a team that, you know, you didn't grow up watching. Everything was brand new. It didn't seem quite like the NFL yet. And we're playing against the Carolina Panthers, another expansion team. So it just wasn't totally there yet. But that second week, we went down in our second preseason game was against the Miami Dolphins. So we're running on the field to go warm up. And as I'm jogging onto the field, Dan Marino's over there throwing passes, warming up. And I remember just jogging and turning around going, hey, guys, that's Dan Marino over there. That's Dan Marino. Right?
Yeah.
Smacking me in the back of the head and say, okay, kid. You're in the league now. Come on, we got to go. We got a job to do.
Yeah. You know, it's a definitely unique life experience for sure that, you know, not too many of us get to experience, you know, and especially for, you know, more than a couple of years.
Yeah. And so you've had obviously an amazing 10-year career with the Cowboys, your Pro Bowl selection 3 years, correct?
Yeah.
Is it 3 years?
Yeah. 3 years.
Pro Bowl, I believe.
Yeah.
How many Super Bowls? Two Super Bowls?
Zero Super Bowls. We lost 3 NFC championship games in a row.
Really?
1980, 1981, and 1982. Yeah, when I got there, Cowboys had been to 2 Super Bowls in a row. 79 was Staubach. Ended up being Rodgers last year. You know, the Cowboys were still one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl. We lost to the Rams, I think, in the first round of the playoffs, and I think the Rams went to the Super Bowl. Then we lost to Philadelphia in 80, San Francisco in 81, and Washington in 82. And, you know, they all, I think Philly lost, and then Washington and San Francisco actually won the Super Bowl. And then we had a couple more good years, like made the playoffs, didn't advance very far. And then, you know, it started going downhill. My last 3 years, we weren't very good. So, yeah, I missed it.
Oh, we all go through those tough years.
Yeah.
Growing up as a kid in Ohio, and you're right. I mean, the Cowboys games run every single weekend. So I grew up hearing your name in the late 70s and all through the 80s, you know, during my teenage years of watching y'all play. So I know you've had definitely some iconic seasons. Matter of fact, I just got done watching you score a touchdown, great pass from Danny White, and scoring a touchdown, you know, watched a little bit of your highlight reels. So, but I will say that, so each of us individually as players, we have a kind of a favorite moment that sticks in our head, and sometimes a few favorite moments that are just ours. And I know it's a little bit tougher in the era of social media with today's players where the camera sees everything.
Oh yeah.
You know, but we tend to have that moment where nobody saw this, but it was one of the most cherished times of my NFL career. Mine happened to happen with Reggie White after playing the Packers my rookie year. It was a pretty special moment that he and I had after the game. Mm-hmm. So did you have a moment like that? Did you have one of your most special moments that maybe nobody else knows about?
One of them involving, you know, another team was, you know, it was probably 85 or 6, because we played the Giants twice a year, obviously, because they were in our division. And Bill Parcells, I think it was the first year, maybe it was the first year Bill was the head coach. And I think, I'm pretty sure, I know he had been on the defensive staff there before. I think he might have been the defensive coordinator. So I think it was the first year Bill was the head coach, and it was kind of early in the year. And before the game, you know, like the early part of warmups, you know, out there just kind of goofing around before it's like the team warm up. So this Giants coach walks over to me. I didn't know who he was. And he says, "Hey, Cosby, you're turning into a real pain in the ass." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Thank you." And then, you know, the game gets going. And I notice, I'm going, "Oh, crap. That was their head coach." And, you know, obviously it was Bill. And I knew the name Bill Parcells. I didn't know what he looked like. And, you know, kind of figured out during that game that, you know, it was Bill. And so we kind of had this little thing whenever we played him twice a year. After that, we kind of, you know, talked to him for, you know, 15, 20 seconds before, you know, during warmups. And, you know, he was always treated me really nicely. I never played for him. No guys have played for him. That wasn't always the case, as most NFL head coaches.
Yeah.
You know, they have, you know, obviously both sides. You know, so, you know, that was something that was, you know, pretty special for me, probably even more so because, I mean, if he'd have got fired in 3 years and no one ever heard of him again, different story. But, you know, that was the beginning of his head coaching career. And, you know, he had a great career, you know, winning Super Bowls and you know, ended up in Dallas for a while coaching. You know, the Cowboys, you know, so that was, you know, something that was a nice compliment, even if he was just a special teams coach, you know, but, you know, being from the head coach and then, you know, yeah. Who Bill was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. It, you know, it's you know, moments like that that just stick in our heads about, you know, what made the experience so incredibly special for all of us, and especially with moments that nobody ever sees or hears about.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So let's go to the next stage, and I want to talk about a little bit about maybe a tougher subject. And you know, being at we are the Pro Football Retired Players Association. Let's talk about transition. Mm-hmm. So I know that a lot of players, as you know, a lot of players have difficulty with the transition of just getting over to normal civilian life and getting into business. And, hey, what do I do next for the next phase of my life? I mean, for me, it, you know, it's a little bit different. I was really injured when I left the league, so I had all that to deal with. So tell me about your transition. I mean, I know for me, it took me about 4 or 5 years to really figure out, hey, you're never going to play again.
Yeah.
So you need to get on with life and find some purpose. So what was your transition like?
Yeah. And, you know, it's nice that you asked that question, because I think people who haven't had to go through it, you know, and especially nowadays, they're like, well, man, they make so much money. What does it matter? Like, they can do whatever they want. You know, I started playing youth football when I was 10, which I don't recommend now, but, you know, that's the way it was. And, you know, and playing baseball and basketball, just that no matter what level you're at, that bond of a locker room and your teammates is different than, and I'm not knocking any organizations, but I was a Boy Scout for a while too. Being on a sport team is different than being a Boy Scout or on the spelling bee team at your elementary school. All that stuff's great, but it's not the same. And then as you go up levels, and then when you got grown men, you know, that are laughing and crying and you know, going through life together, you know, that what you miss playing some, but obviously I think like everybody, it's the locker room, the brotherhood. I don't know that you can really replace it. It's really, really hard. And so going in, you know, I, after I kind of got established, my career was going to be 4 years, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, whatever it was. The one thing I told myself is I don't want to be the guy that everyone's going, why is he still playing?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, growing up a fan of, you know, all three major sports, there's always, you know, the guy that's trying to hang on too long. And And it's even more so nowadays with the money. I mean, if you can get another year and get another 10 to 40 million, hey, why not? But I didn't want to be that guy, you know, so that was one thing I knew. And that's why after I had my Achilles surgery, I was 33 going my 11th year, new ownership, you know, really bad team. And like, you know, it's time to do something else. I had no idea what that was. And so we stayed in Dallas for 13, 14 months after I retired, finally sold our house. My wife is from Northern California also. Like I said, we met in college. So we moved back to Northern California. That was just kind of always the plan. Not knowing what I was going to do. I mean, you know, we had some money saved, not a ton, but, you know, not enough to live on for the rest of our, you know, life. And we, for the first year, I didn't really do too much, you know, like helped coach of my son's flag football team, you know, that kind of, you know, normal father stuff. And then I started volunteered assistant at Santa Clara, who at the time was still playing football, but it was like a 2-hour drive. So I'd go down for like a practice, stay at my mom's house, go to another practice, come home, and then go back for the games. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I got, you know, I really liked the coaching, you know, because it's not the same as playing, but, you know, there's still, you know, you're around the game and you're around, you know, they're, you know, college student athletes. I call them all kids. You know, it's probably the closest to it. It's not the same. But I got really lucky that then Bill Walsh had retired from the 49ers, went back to Stanford, and he had been there 1 year. And his second year, Bill Ring was his running back coach. Bill Ring left to go into business. And a guy I coached with the Santa Clara, his high school coach was Bill Walsh's best friend. He happened to mention, he goes, hey, you know, Doug Cosby's coaching at Santa Clara. Kid I coached is on the staff, said he's doing a really good job with the tight ends there. So out of the blue, I get a phone call. Hey, Bill would like to talk to you about joining the staff at Stanford. So long story short, I coached with Bill for 2 years at Stanford. And then he resigned. I turned down an opportunity to coach in the NFL that following year and took a job as an AD head coach at a Division III school for a year. Then I got the offensive coordinator job at Cal for 2 years. It was a really bad fit. Left there, went back to Menlo College for 2 more years, then got out of coaching, doing some business stuff. And then about 10 years ago, started doing some high school coaching here in California, over in Hawaii, and back in California now. And have a small business where we train quarterbacks and receivers with some friends of mine that were, one was an NFL quarterback. We coached together at Cal. They since have left the business because they're back coaching in college, so they can't be part of it. So, but the thing that, the biggest thing that happened was a good friend of mine from Santa Clara, he's a great businessman. At the time, we didn't know it, but we ended up getting, I think, 6 partners. We bought the domestic license for O'Neill Sportswear out of bankruptcy 28 years ago. We still own it. The company's grown. It's called La Jolla Group. We have about 5 brands now that we either own or we own the license, all the kind of action sportswear, mostly in surf. And, you know, it's really helped pay the bills. It's been really good. You know, some bad years, but a lot of really good years. And, you know, just on the board of directors, not employees, not actively involved day to day. But, you know, and then helped a friend for 5 years when I got a coach and started a movie production business in Los Angeles. I did that for 5 years. And then it was time to leave and move back from LA back to Northern California. So a little bit of everything, but, you know, probably the biggest thing to help me through the transition, I think, was the coaching. But it's hard. There's still days, like especially being around in locker rooms, you know, even if it's a high school locker room, it's just not the same. Even if you're the head coach, it's not the same as being one of the guys. Yeah. And I tell everyone I coach that, I go like, it's about you guys. It's not, I mean, yeah, I mean, I get a, you know, if I'm the head coach, I can determine who's going to play, who's not going to play, you know, there's been times I've been the play caller. I can call the plays, but I can't execute them. I can't do them. They get, people come to watch you play. They don't come to watch me coach. It's about the players. And I think a lot of coaches don't get that. The guys that played a long time, I think, get it. I think even in NFL, a lot of head coaches and assistant coaches think it's too much about them. Not all of them. And in college, a lot of them. And, man, it's about the players. I mean, I don't care if you're Bill Walsh. People don't – they might like to go watch your team. They don't go pay all that money. They didn't do that to watch Bill look at a call sheet and call a play. They came to watch Joe Montana complete passes to Jerry Rice. And, you know, that's really helped That's really helped me in my coaching.
We all crave that. We all crave, you know, getting back to, you know, trying to gain some semblance of that camaraderie that we miss just being involved and being a part of that team. And, you know, and I honestly think as much as we tried to duplicate it with get togethers and other functions like that, it's still
not the same.
Something uniquely special and it's just not the same. And you just have to come to terms, I think, with it never will be that again. And that's okay. And this was that part of my life, you know, and I could look back on that and cherish it now. So to wrap this thing up, I always ask the question, what would you, looking back on your life now, what would you tell your young 21, 22-year-old self as you're entering the NFL? What's the piece of advice you would give yourself?
Probably two things. Save more money. Probably the biggest thing. I mean, we saved money, but you could always save more. I think, like, save more money and, you know, and you know, I worked really hard, but I could have worked harder. Like, work harder. When you think you're working hard, amp it up, work harder. And then the biggest thing is what I tell everyone I've coached also, is have fun, enjoy it, because it's called playing football. Even though it's a job, nobody says I work football. You know, you play. And I tell kids, Google the word play and playing. Like, enjoy it, because as you just said, it's going to last 1 year, 10 years for Tom Brady, maybe 21 years. But it's going to, for everyone, it's going to end. And just, you know, really enjoy it, because it's such a unique experience, you know, and it's, you know, we're just so blessed to be able to do it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Great, great sage advice. Doug, thanks for hanging out with me today. It was a pleasure getting to know you and digging in on your story and hearing all this great stuff and great advice for any young players coming up. That's pretty awesome. So thanks for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, and no problem, Brian. The only thing, I was a little disappointed. I thought you were going to ask me to share a Tom Landry story, but I'm glad you did.
Oh, my gosh. Some of those are probably – You have too many of them?
No, I don't have that many of them. Most of them are probably better left untold, probably. Next time.
That's for sure. Next time, we will definitely do this again. This was awesome. Thanks for hanging out, Doug. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Great hanging with you.